Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and at 13 hours GMT on Tuesday, the 24th of September, this is our main story. Britain's highest court has ruled it was not lawful for the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, to prorogue or suspend Parliament ahead of Brexit.
This court has already concluded that the Prime Minister's advice to Her Majesty was unlawful, void, and of no effect.
Boris Johnson had this to say.
Obviously, this is a verdict that we will respect, and we respect the judicial process. I have to say I strongly disagree with what the justices have found.
We'll hear from our political and legal teams for their reaction to this historic event.
This is groundbreaking, it's extraordinary, and the consequences politically, constitutionally, legally are absolutely seismic.
In other news today, Spain's Supreme Court has ordered that the remains of the dictator General Franco be moved from a state mausoleum to an ordinary cemetery. And the Indonesian authorities have detained more than 700 people in Papua province following deadly protests on Monday. The Supreme Court in Britain has overruled the Prime Minister Boris Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament for 5 weeks in the run-up to Brexit. Delivering the verdict in London, the court's president, Baroness Hale, said the 11 judges agreed unanimously that the prorogation was unlawful, declaring it null and void.
Parliament, and in particular the House of Commons, as the elected representatives of the people, has a right to a voice in how that change comes about. The effect on the fundamentals of our democracy was extreme. No justification for taking action with such an extreme effect has been put before the court. The only evidence of why it was taken is the memorandum from Nicky da Costa of 15th August. This explains why holding the Queen's speech to open a new session of Parliament on the 14th of October would be desirable. It does not explain why it was necessary to bring parliamentary business to a halt for 5 weeks before that, when the normal period necessary to prepare for a Queen's speech is 4 to 6 days. It does not discuss the difference between prorogation and recess. It does not discuss the impact of prorogation on the special procedures for scrutinising the delegated legislation necessary to achieve an orderly withdrawal from the European Union, with or without a withdrawal agreement, on the 31st of October. It does not discuss what parliamentary time would be needed to secure parliamentary approval for any new withdrawal agreement as required by Section 13 of the European Union Withdrawal Act 2018. The court is bound to conclude, therefore, that the decision to advise Her Majesty to prorogue Parliament was unlawful because it had the effect of frustrating or preventing the ability of Parliament to carry out its constitutional functions without reasonable justification.
And Lady Hale said members of Parliament could return to the Commons as soon as possible.
Parliament has not been prorogued. This is the unanimous judgment of all 11 justices. It is for Parliament, and in particular the Speaker and the Lord Speaker, to decide what to do next. Unless there is some parliamentary rule of which we are unaware, they can take immediate steps to enable each House to meet as soon as possible. It is not clear to us that any step is needed from the Prime Minister, but if it is, the Court is pleased that his counsel have told the Court that he will take all necessary steps to comply with the terms of any declaration made by this court.
The BBC's legal correspondent Clive Coleman listened to the findings in the Supreme Court and gave his reaction a short time later outside the building.
I don't think any of us saw this being a unanimous ruling by all 11 justices. And Ben, I think this is really the most significant, the most muscular example that we have ever seen of judicial review, of independent judges being able to stop the government in its tracks, because what the government, in this instance the Prime Minister, has done is unlawful. This is groundbreaking, it's extraordinary, and the consequences politically, constitutionally, legally are absolutely seismic. This is a devastating, devastating defeat for the government and for Boris Johnson. And if one looks at the wording of this, the actions taken by the Prime Minister have the effect of frustrating or preventing the ability of Parliament to carry out its constitutional functions without reasonable justification. We should just take a step back, just pause for a moment and consider. This is a ruling which says that a Prime Minister of the United Kingdom has unlawfully advised the Queen, has unlawfully prorogued the sovereign body in our constitution, Parliament, over the way there. That is really staggering. I mean, one just has to pause and take that in. It is devastating, and no one saw this coming as a unanimous ruling from all 11.
That was Clive Coleman. The businesswoman Gina Miller, who challenged the prorogation in court, said MPs should head back to work.
The ruling today speaks volumes. This Prime Minister must open the doors of Parliament tomorrow. MPs must get back and be brave and bold in holding this unscrupulous government to account.
That was Gina Miller. Well, the head of the main opposition Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, announced the judgment to delegates at the party's annual conference in Brighton in southern England.
I invite Boris Johnson, in the historic words, to consider his position. And become the shortest-serving Prime Minister there's ever been.
The Conservative MP Andrew Bridgen supports a no-deal Brexit.
It's the worst possible outcome for our democracy. I think what we've got is a Parliament that's completely out of step with sentiment of the country. They're holding our democracy to ransom. They're completely ignoring the vote we had in 2016 to leave the European Union. And what we're going to see now is the Speaker effectively taking control of Parliament and playing to the Remainers' tune.
The SNP MP, Joanna Cherry QC, took the case to the Scottish courts.
As regards Mr Boris Johnson, the highest court in the United Kingdom has unanimously found that his advice to prorogue this Parliament, his advice given to Her Majesty the Queen, was unlawful. His position is untenable, and he should have the guts for once to do the decent thing and resign.
Richard Tice is chairman of the Brexit Party. He says the decision is seismic and historic.
Boris Johnson is probably going to have to offer his resignation, or there may well be a vote of no confidence. What is absolutely clear is that the public needs to understand we're not leaving the European Union on October the 31st. There will have to be a request to the European Union for an extension. I think when that penny drops, people are going to be increasingly angry across the country.
Then, speaking near the Houses of Parliament, the Speaker of the House of Commons, John Bercow, said MPs would be back in Parliament on Wednesday.
In the light of that explicit judgment, I have instructed the House authorities to prepare, not for the recall, the prorogation was unlawful and is void, to prepare for the resumption of the business of the House of Commons. Specifically, I've instructed the House authorities to undertake such steps as are necessary to ensure that the House of Commons sits tomorrow and that it does so at 11:30 a.m.
That was John Bercow. Well, we heard from our political correspondent Naomi Grimley. So, no reopening of Parliament, no Queen's speech.
That's the strange thing, because it was so unanimous and because we now know that Parliament is going to resume meeting. All the things we thought were going to happen, such as a big Queen's speech where Boris Johnson would lay out his agenda for government in mid-October, all of that now falls by the wayside. It is literally, as Baroness Hell said, as if that prorogation or that shutting down of Parliament never happened.
And you were just looking at your phone screen as you came in, and you were saying that Boris Johnson has had something to say about this ruling, has he?
That's right. Boris Johnson is actually in New York attending the UN General Assembly. So an uncomfortable time for him to be out of the country. He's just told the BBC that he is going to abide by the ruling of the Supreme Court. Now, you would think that was motherhood and apple pie, but there have been some speculation that he might try and find a way round it. The fact that it was unanimous, and also that it was this very audacious ruling, if you like, makes it very difficult for Boris Johnson to try and find a way around this. It was clearly a political mistake, and now we know a legal one too.
That was Naomi Grimley, and we will hear from the Prime Minister himself a little later in the podcast, so something to look forward to. Now to other news. Spain's Supreme Court has ruled in favour of removing the remains of the late dictator Francisco Franco from a state mausoleum. Guy Hedgecoe reports from Madrid.
This is a major victory for the socialist government, whose plans to dig up the remains of Franco have been repeatedly delayed by legal and bureaucratic obstacles. This decision paves the way for the dictator's body to be moved from the Valley of the Fallen, a huge monument in the mountains outside Madrid, to a small cemetery where Franco's wife is already buried. Historical memory groups have long campaigned for the exhumation, saying that the Valley of the Fallen mausoleum glorifies the legacy of a brutal dictator.
That was Guy Hedgecoe in Madrid. The right to be forgotten was introduced in Europe in 2014, obliging search engines like Google to remove links to outdated, sensitive, personal information from their online searches. Now, though, in a big test case, the European Court of Justice has ruled that Google does not have to apply that right worldwide. Dean Armstrong is a barrister at 36 Commercial. He's a lawyer specialising in data, and he explained the current law as it applies in Europe.
The right to be forgotten allows that link to be disappeared if that data is no longer relevant or necessary to be kept. Or if, for example, one of the lawful bases under the regulation, i.e. if you withdraw your consent to that being kept, then that is then taken off. So that's your right to remove irrelevant or outdated data.
Our technology correspondent Zoe Kleinman has been following the case.
A big landmark victory for Google today. And the reason that it's come about is because the French data privacy regulator tried to impose a fine on Google for not removing the search results of people who had won this right to be forgotten around the world. So currently, if you had a successful right to be forgotten appeal and I Googled your name in Europe, I wouldn't see the search results that you didn't want me to see. But if I did it in the US or I did it through a virtual private network, perhaps, then I would see them. France said, no, this isn't on. It needs to be a global thing. Google kicked back and said, well, that has the potential to turn search engines into this sort of global censorship tool. And that impinges on the US freedom of speech values that Google as a US company has. Now, it had backings from lots of different companies, including Microsoft. And that's why this appeal came to the highest court in Europe. And they've ruled in Google's favour.
In Europe, of course, since 2014, we've had the right to be forgotten. Give us an idea about the sort of tensions between freedom of speech and that particular right. What sort of information does it include?
I mean, it's kind of an ongoing philosophical argument, isn't it? This sort of issue about freedom of speech versus right to privacy. Basically, Google has the right to say no if it thinks that the information you want it to delist, that's not delete, by the way. They still exist, these pages, but they just don't show up in the search engines. And it can refuse if it thinks that that information is in the public interest. It has released some examples of things that have come its way. So, for example, there are some cases of people who were convicted of a crime in the past and that crime was reported and they want to disassociate. This only happens, by the way, if you Google their actual name. So the crime itself would still be visible. But if you Google their name, it won't necessarily be attached. And that sort of goes with thinking about, you know, people who commit crime and then express remorse and serve their sentence or whatever. You know, they have a right to carry on with their life and to not constantly be reminded of that past. And there's other examples of people having extramarital affairs, for example. And, you know, it's sensitive kind of information that arguably could be damaging.
That was Zoe Kleinman. More than 700 people have been detained following violent protests in the Indonesian province of Papua that have left at least 26 people dead. It follows an outbreak of unrest last month, ostensibly over racist abuse of Papuans in Indonesia. They are also demanding independence for the region. Jonathan Head reports.
The most serious violence appears to have occurred in the highland town of Wamena, where a crowd protesting against an alleged racist slur clashed with the police and then set a number of buildings alight. The police say most of those who died were trapped in burning buildings. There were also clashes between students and the security forces in the provincial capital Jayapura, in which one soldier and three protesters are reported to have been killed.
That was Jonathan Head. Still to come in the podcast.
The advantage of gyrocopters are you can fly quite low and you can fly quite slow.
The British man who's become the first person to circumnavigate the world in a gyrocopter. In recent weeks, Brazil's president Jair Bolsonaro has come under huge international pressure over his handling of the Amazon wildfires. And so his address at the United Nations Assembly today is expected to be designed to help repair Brazil's global image. Meanwhile, the wildfires are continuing to burn and widespread illegal gold mining in protected areas is being carried out at an alarming rate, as Will Grant reports from the Amazonian state of Pará.
At the annual fiesta in Aldeia do Chão, two teams of dancers compete in a carnival of colour, choreography, fireworks and song. But as the fireworks crackle overhead, the locals need to be careful. This is dry season, and one loose spark can cause huge environmental damage. A wildfire here last week burned 1,600 football pitches of forest in just 4 days, devastating the ecosystem and destroying another part of one of the world's last natural protections against climate change. A year ago, Daniel Gutierrez and his team decided to take matters into their own hands. With some basic training from military firefighters, they set up a volunteer fire service in Aldeia do Chão. Though they are woefully under-resourced, when not putting out the flames, they patrol the rainforest for areas that are still smouldering to prevent new fires from breaking out. They've barely rested this year, says Daniel.
I wake up every morning and I ask to Amazon, what is my mission today? I really feel that I have a mission here. And when we face the fire, we are facing like a god. We have a lot of respect. Because it's very big, it's very dangerous.
I'm walking through an area of destroyed forest. Under my feet is completely scorched and blackened ground, and all around me I'm looking at the remnants of burned trees. I could probably walk for hundreds of metres in each direction and I still wouldn't get out of this quite haunting, almost lunar landscape.
We are blind about Amazon. We are blind. Before was forest, and because of human beings, it's desert now. We are making a desert in the biggest forest in the world. We are making our graves.
The environmental damage in the state of Pará takes various forms. Over-farming for soya, land clearing, deforestation, and as we saw on a Greenpeace monitoring flight over the region, illegal gold mining. It is a hugely detrimental practice involving the use of mercury in the waterways of protected indigenous lands.
So we've come very low now so that we can see the runoff and the slurry. Whole areas have been ripped open. It's like a sort of scar into the forest cover. The longer we go, the further it snakes. You can see down that way, wow, it is just going back so far. It's like a river of its own making, but all of this is sort of an open gold mine. It is shocking.
On the flight with us was Arnaldo Munduruku, a 71-year-old leader of the Munduruku ethnic group, who was inspecting the damage the mines were doing to their territory.
Asked about President Bolsonaro's plans to allow greater development of the region, the indigenous leader was clear.
The government should respect our land. There are laws that have been here for years. Bolsonaro shouldn't touch our lands. Our land is sacred. We won't accept anyone on our land. It's where we are born and die. The Munduruku people did not come from another country. We were born here in Brazil.
The indigenous leader Arnaldo Munduruku, ending that report from Will Grant in the Amazon state of Pará. An extraordinary meeting of the Universal Postal Union begins in Geneva today. Nearly 200 member states are trying to resolve a dispute over postage costs. The United States is so unhappy, it's threatened to leave the organisation. The UPU, founded in 1874 and now a UN agency, is the body which sets standards for the world's postal services. Imogen Folks reports from Geneva.
Hardly anyone's heard of it, but nearly everyone uses it. The Universal Postal Union ensures parcels and letters from one country are safely delivered to another. Member states pay dues, wealthier countries more than poorer ones, to ensure post is affordable to all. But in recent years, e-commerce has overtaken private post. China sends millions of commercial items to customers in the United States, but China, still classed by the UPU as a developing country, pays much lower dues than the US. President Donald Trump, already engaged in numerous trade disputes with China, says that's unfair. He says the US will leave the UPU next month and set its own postal rates, negotiating them bilaterally with other countries. While many agree the UPU system needs reform, others warn a US pullout could lead to a global postal free-for-all, with no one sure how to post a parcel to or from the world's biggest economy, putting small businesses and even US postal voters living overseas at a disadvantage. The meeting in Geneva is the last chance to try to find a compromise.
That was Imogen Folks. We like getting letters. The address is New Broadcasting House, Portland Place, W1A1AA, in case you're interested. A British man has become the first person to circumnavigate the world in a gyrocopter. James Ketchell landed at an airfield in England on Sunday from where he had set off 6 months ago. His flight path took him over Europe, Asia and North America on a journey of 44,000 kilometres. Ben James asked him, what was the journey like?
It's an incredible experience flying the aircraft. Actually, it's a really good analogy. It is like a flying motorbike. It's amazing. You'll get to see the planet in a whole new way. The advantage of gyrocopters are you can fly quite low and you can fly quite slow. And they're quite often, people look at them and think they're helicopters, but they're not actually helicopters because the rotor is not powered. That's just free spinning via the air passing underneath it from my forward motion. So they're quite amazing machines.
Fascinating. So not quite right then to compare it exactly to a helicopter. I can see from one of the pictures of you flying low over the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, one of the advantages that you talk about. Where else did you fly over and get a really good view of?
Well, I mean, Russia was absolutely incredible. That's an amazing country.
And lasted a long time, I guess.
It's a big, big place. It's huge. The wildlife was incredible. I saw bears, whales, almost everything. It was amazing.
I know the range of your gyrocopter is not particularly great, so you had to hop around the world from place to place and get fuel in it pretty often, did you?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. I mean, when people say, how on earth did you fly a gyrocopter across the Atlantic? But you do it in hops. You go from Canada to Greenland, from Greenland to Iceland, from Iceland to the Faroe Islands, and back into Scotland. So it is actually possible.
And when you appear from the sky in your gyrocopter, this bloke from Britain in the middle of Russia, what do people say to you?
Actually, they were incredible. I just couldn't have been more friendly, to be honest. And actually, I mean, the whole reason I did this was to try and inspire young people to pursue their own goals and dreams and raise money for two fantastic charities. And one of the things that I say to young people is, 99% of people out there are amazing and kind and want to help you. So don't be afraid of putting yourself out there. And actually, this project has really highlighted that.
That was James Ketchell. Files released today at the National Archives in London reveal that British intelligence ignored a tip-off about one of the most significant Cold War spies because it came from his spurned wife. The files cover the so-called Portland spy ring, which was exposed in 1961. Santa Berg reports.
Through the 1950s, Harry Houghton sold British secrets to communist agents. MI5 files show that his wife discovered his activity and, in 1956, tried to alert the authorities. But she had separated from Houghton by then and was dismissed as a jealous and disgruntled wife. It was another 4 years before Houghton was investigated. He was then arrested with four other members of the so-called Portland spy ring. All five received lengthy jail sentences after a trial at the Old Bailey.
That was Santa Berg. Now, more on our main story. Britain's highest court has ruled that Boris Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament in the run-up to Brexit was unlawful, in a heavy blow to the Prime Minister. Opposition politicians have accused him of lying to Queen Elizabeth and have called for his resignation. Mr. Johnson, who's currently in New York, gave this reaction to the Supreme Court's ruling.
Obviously, this is a verdict that we will respect, and we respect the judicial process. I have to say I strongly disagree with what the justices have found. I don't think that it's right, but we will go ahead, and of course Parliament will come back. I do think there's a good case for getting on with a Queen's speech anyway, and we'll do that. But I think the most important thing is we get on and deliver Brexit on October the 31st. And there's clearly the claimants in this case are determined to try to frustrate that and to stop that. I think it'd be very unfortunate if Parliament made that objective, which the people want delivered, more difficult. But we'll get on.
That was the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. And a reminder that the Parliamentary Speaker John Bercow has said that MPs should be back in the Commons at 10:30 GMT, that's 11:30 BST, on Wednesday. And finally, a court in the German city of Frankfurt has passed a ruling that may be welcomed by people who like a late-night tipple. They've declared hangovers an illness. But as Oliver Berlau explains, excusing boozing wasn't quite what the judges had in mind.
It is, surely, just a coincidence that the ruling by the higher regional court in Frankfurt was published 2 days after the start of the Oktoberfest. But some may take it as a sign. After all, more than 7 million litres of beer are consumed each year at the festival, and if a hangover is classed as an illness, it might provide some excuse for people struggling to make it to work after a night of revelry. But the judges had other things in mind. They were worried about firms offering anti-hangover drinks or powders. As information about food products must not contain features about the treatment of human illness, the judges declared hangovers an illness, that is, something which leads to disruptions of the normal state or activity of the body. There's even a medical term for it, vasalgia. Somehow it sounds better than I've got the flu.
That was Oliver Berlau. If you'll excuse me, it's been a very busy day. And that's it from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you would like to comment on this one or the topics we covered in it, do please send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Jackie Leonard. Until next time, cheers.
With the rise of stress in the modern world, a good night's sleep is going extinct. But there is hope. IKEA has everything you need to create a sleep sanctuary, like mattresses that make the perfect nest, bedding that matches your style, and curtains to keep that pesky sunlight from waking you. Check out ikea-usa.com/bedroom to discover new ways to save your sleep today.